I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We're going to the Mercedes-Benz of Bedford hotline, and we are joined by our good friend, Dennis Maniloff from the Plain Dealer in Cleveland.com. D-Man, how are you?
Gentlemen, how you doing?
Good. D-Man.
Okay, so let me ask you this. What did you watch last night? Did you watch the Indian special, or did you watch the ESPYs?
Oh, I watched the Indian special and didn't watch a minute of the ESPYs.
Okay, your thoughts on the Indian special?
Well, you know, it's bittersweet. I mean, as a Northeast Ohioan guy who grew up an Indians fan, diehard, and then a reporter who has written about the Indians for 25-plus years, it was just interesting because, on one hand, it brought back great memories of an incredible run, but on the other hand, it ultimately did fall short of that World Series title. So you had a little bit of a twinge there, especially the 97 World Series, more so than the 95 World Series, because I was there in Miami in Game 7. I saw the trophy and everything else moved out of the clubhouse. I was in the concourse when the players walked from the dugout to the clubhouse and then proceeded to go into the locker room. And that was, I've always said, that's the most difficult day I've ever had as a journalist, because I was fighting the emotions of, being happy about the Indians, and then, an inning later you're not happy, or two innings later you're not happy, and you have to check it, though, as a journalist, because you can't root for anybody at that point.
Hey, D-Man, did anything happen that you had not known about before, or that you had forgotten about, and this brought it back out?
Yeah, I freely admit this, and maybe it was written somewhere and I just didn't see it, but I did not realize that Hargrove was calling the pitches in the ninth inning for Mesa in Game 7. And, I admit that I did not see that. If it was written somewhere or spoken somewhere, I always thought that it was Alomar and Mesa that were going back and forth, and that Mesa had overruled Alomar, and Mesa had decided he was going to throw the slider away. But it was actually Mike Hargrove that was calling the pitches from the dugout. And I'll tell you what, Mesa, he comes across as pretty defiant there. He's just like, the manager, he thinks he knows what he's doing. Well, guess what? In retrospect, Hargrove didn't know, because I guess Mesa was not happy that all of a sudden the manager's starting to call pitches at this point. Well, as it turned out, Hargrove probably would have been right.
It was Dick Pohl then too, right? 97?
I think so.
I wonder why they didn't, when he was shaking off the signs.
Yeah, somebody come out.
Why didn't they call time and go out there and say, hey, this is why? You think about that for a moment. I mean, now it's really easy. We're 20 years past. But then you kind of wonder, I wonder why somebody didn't jump out of the dugout and say something to him.
Or on the phone, say when he gets up there, you're pitching it inside.
Have your research staff check this, the great Filar or something. I thought Wiley was the pitching coach.
It might have been Wiley. I'm sorry.
I thought it was.
Was Pohl in 95?
I don't know, but I could have sworn that Mark Wiley was one of the first people that we were available, that was available to speak after the game in the clubhouse. So you can check on that. But it was that was interesting. And the other thing that was a little disconcerting to me, I wish John Hart would have taken ownership of what I thought was, one of the more disappointing parts about the whole dynasty that wasn't, and that is Eddie Murray, the lowballing of Eddie Murray. I thought that was something that's always stuck in my craw, that something, an unforced error, almost an unheard of, salary drop from $3 million to $2 million. And all Hart said was, well, you know, you can't, we're Cleveland, you know, we're in a market where you can't do that. I wish he would have said, you know what, I made a mistake, I disrespected Eddie Murray, and it came back to bite me.
Yeah, but then Murray came back and said, I'm not gonna play first base because Hart basically called me nothing but a DH.
Yeah, and I'm right. I'm not saying that Eddie Murray's blameless in this. I just think that Hart, I always felt that Hart insulted Murray there when he initially offered what he offered, and I wish I would have heard last night that Hart had said, you know what, in retrospect, I wouldn't have disrespected a guy like Eddie Murray like that. But Hart was right to say, though, that, you know, the trades that he made were not disastrous in this respect. Certainly the Lofton trade, you know, because we sit there and we were all stunned when Kenny Lofton was shipped out. Of course, we were startled when, you know, Baerga was sent out. But the fact of the matter is that in 97, you know, granted, 96 was bizarre with the division series loss, but in 97 they come back with that sort of reshaped group and almost win the World Series. So it wasn't as though Hart's trades of those big names, Baerga, Murray, and Lofton, absolutely ended the dynasty potential or the chance to win a World Series.
I think the other thing about Eddie Murray is it made it sound like it was like super bitter and contentious against the organization, yet he came back in 02. Now, Mark was running the show by then, right? And maybe that's, you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. Eddie came back and was still the hitting coach from 02 to 05. Now, that might have been his relationship with Mark and the fact that wasn't Eddie's dad, or Eddie's agent was Mark's dad, I think, at one point. So
correct.
That might be why. But still, if it was so bad, you know, would he have come back to be a part of the organization in 02?
Solid point. And I'll say this too, Andy and Les. The one thing that kept rattling around in my mind was, and I guess it's why you struggle sometimes to watch something like that. You have Lofton, Vizquel, Baerga, Tomy, Ramirez, Bell, Murray, Sereno, Alomar. Just say you take those nine guys and sprinkle in a few others. The reality is that nine never played a 162-game regular season together. That's what was so strange about it, because in 94, you didn't get to see how it would play out because of the strike or the lockout. In 95, you know, the season delayed starting, so you only play 144. In 96, okay, now the trades start. In 97, it's a reshaped team. In 98, Bell's already gone, and of course, you know, 97 Bell was gone. But you have these different form, you know, these different combinations. But that group, that Lofton, Vizquel, Baerga, Tomy, Ramirez, Bell, Murray, Sereno, Alomar, never played a full regular season of 162 games. I wish that would have happened.
You know, you mentioned that, and the 97 team, which had Matt Williams as a third baseman. You had Justice. You had Marquise Grissom. You think of the guys you're talking about, but the reality is one third of the starters were the other guys in '97.
Yeah, and that '97 team, I think about a lot now because it feels like there's a feeling to me about this group. If you can tie it into the present, it just has a similar feel that the regular season did not go swimmingly in 97. It's not going swimmingly in 2017, but you get the feeling that they're going to do enough to win the division, just like they did 20 years ago. And I'm not guaranteeing that this 17 team goes to the World Series and comes within three outs of winning it. I'm just saying that the way the regular season has unfolded to date, it has a similar feel to me to the 97 club.
So basically they're waiting for Tomy's birthday to raise their socks up. Is that what you're saying?
There you go. They're waiting for somebody's birthday to pull the socks up or somebody's birthday to do something. But, you know, I think this group has – you know, has the talent, and it helps that the division, just like in 97, it helps the division what isn't exactly bursting at the seams with super talented teams. So, you know, I think this group, this current group will be all right, but, you know, the 97 team was definitely special.
All right, Steven, let's talk about this year's team for a second. What needs to happen for them in the second half other than having Jim Tomey's birthday, having them pull their socks?
Yeah, I mean, you stay healthy for sure. Obviously, that's a given. Or you get healthy. You know, a guy like Kipnis needs to come back. But, you know, you want Kluber and Carrasco healthy because they've been good, really good at the top of your rotation. You'd like a third starter to emerge as consistent, be it, you know, Clevinger or Bauer. In the lineup, you hope Ramirez keeps hitting. I don't see any reason why he can't. I don't expect him to get a hit every time he comes to the plate, but he's a hitting machine, so he'll keep doing what he's doing. I'm thinking of the lineup. A guy who probably needs to pick up the pace would be Carlos Santana. You hope Santana gets hot. He's done it before. He's got a track record of getting hot. No reason he can't do it again. You know, Encarnacion, Brantley, stay healthy. Kipnis come back healthy and do some things. Bullpen is what it is. They're fine. Still look to make a potential deal, make an upgrade in the rotation if you don't feel comfortable with what you have beyond Kluber and Carrasco.
All righty, D-Man. Thank you, thank you, thank you. What do you got cooking in Cleveland.com right now, by the way?
Well, just talking about the Indians, the dynasty that almost was, and then, you know, a lot of golf.
A lot of golf. I like it. D-Man, thank you very much. Appreciate all your time.
Thanks, D-Man.
Thanks, guys.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.